بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم نحمد ونصلي على رسول الكريم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته Welcome back. Alhamdulillah, we praise Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Ask him to send peace and blessing of his beloved and our beloved Sayyidina Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. I'll go through from the Al-Ajwab al-Jaliyah, finished last week. We did this in Bidayat al-Abid, and it just as I mentioned last week, we do it in both books. Today is the recap. Like I said, this is very rapid. There will be some things in here that you probably haven't heard in the other book, but you can go through the recordings later on, inshallah. But it's just a revision of last week. There's three masail that are left from last week, which I will mention to you as well, inshallah. So the brother asked about vinegar, the distance of masafat al-qasar, the distance you shorten the prayer. And there was a masala related to cat drinking from your water, which I'll mention, inshallah. Let's go through this quickly because it's just a recap. Any questions before we start? So just to have it in my mind regarding last week or... Anyway, we're repeating the content again. So if there's a question, by all means, ask me at the end of reading this, inshallah. So this is the second half of the Tahara. So we'll finish from Tahara as we did with Bidayat al-Abid last week. And then we're starting Salat today in Bidayat al-Abid. How many things necessitate ghusl and what are they? Seven things necessitate ghusl, and they are semen moving from its point of origin, whether it flows out of the urethra or not. Semen exiting from the penis with desire. If it exits without desire, it does not necessitate ghusl. Penetration of the full penis or part of the head without a barrier, whether it be vaginal or anal, whether it be with a dead human or animal, this can occur someone under duress by force. When a disbeliever becomes a Muslim, even if he was a murtad, end of menses, end of the postnatal bleeding, so end of hayd and nifas, death as an act of worship, and it is not due to the body of the deceased becoming dirty as opposed to the first six. How many prerequisites are for ghusl are there? So before ghusl, what are the things that need to be? These are preconditioned shurut, and there are seven prerequisites of ghusl, and they are. So there are seven prerequisites of ghusl, and they are. Ending of that which it made it wajib. They said a thing that caused the ghusl has to end. Intention. So for example, the hayd has to finish. Intention, you have to make intention for ghusl, being Muslim, being of sound intellect, being discerning. Tahur water, that is acquired in a halal manner. Removal of what prevents water reaching the body, for example, paint, wax, etc. What is wajib in ghusl? There is only one wajib in ghusl, like wudu, that is saying bismillah. If one omits it out of forgetfulness or ignorance, then it does not invalidate the ghusl. However, if it is omitted intentionally, then ghusl is invalid. What is the fard and any salat done with that ghusl will also be invalid as well, any ibadah done that requires ghusl, like tawaf, etc. What is the fard of ghusl? There is only one fard of ghusl, which is to wash the whole body, including the inside and outside of the mouth and nose. So there's one thing you have to do, wash the whole body. That includes like all the whole body from top of the head to the bottom of the feet, belly button, you know, crevices, and also the inside of the mouth and nose. How many sunnahs of ghusl are there and what are they? There are seven sunnahs of ghusl, and they are to do wudu before it. So these are sunnahs, right? To remove from the prior parts and the body semen or filth, to pour water on the head three times and on the rest of the body three times, to do so by starting with the right continuity, not to give a long gap between the washing. This is sunnah, right, in the ghusl. Rubbing with the hand all over the body, washing the feet again in another location. The washing the feet in another location, in the old days, they didn't have showers or drainage like we have today. So if you're making ghusl in a certain spot, the water would pool there. And if there's any najasa or anything that's not clean comes into it, then that's pooled into that water. So you would go somewhere else, move, take a few steps away. You wash your feet separately from the place that where the water is pooled. This is not generally applicable to us today. Because generally we're having a shower and we're doing it under running water and the water is draining, leaving. There are 16 types of sunnah ghusls for the Jummah prayer. When you give ghusl to the dead. So if you're giving ghusl, like actually do the act of ghusl, washing the dead body, it's sunnah for you to do a ghusl afterwards. Wudu you have to do, but ghusl is sunnah. The Eid prayer on its day, the eclipse prayer, the rain prayer, due to madness. It's not compulsory, but someone might have a, what do they call it? Like in schizophrenia or some sort of where they have like, you know, sometimes they're conscious, or someone suffering from early stage dementia, they're sort of aware and not unaware, Allah protect. So after fainting, during chronic bleeding before every salat. So remember that wudu was needed for chronic bleeding, right? But this is talking about ghusl. So it's better to do sunnah to do ghusl. Also at the time ihram. So all of these are related to hajj, ihram, entering city Mecca, entering the haram, before standing at Arafah, before tawaf al-ziyarah, before tawaf al-wida, standing the night in Muzdalifah, standing, stoning, before stoning jamarat. All of these things, if you look, a lot of these things, a lot of these acts, they require you to be in large crowds of people, and also for the sanctity of the place. But sometimes these things are so close together because we travel very quickly, like between Ihram and Makkah and the sanctuary. Sometimes it's like very, because that motor transportation is quick. So if a person tried it, it's commendable. But the point is that also that you're traveling and you're in crowds, you should not smell bad. Wash yourself, that could be the benefit, but also for the sanctity of the act that you're doing. And to make tayammum is mustahab for all the above out of necessity. How many prerequisites are there for the validity of tayammum? Tayammum requires intention, Islam, sound intellect, and age of discernment, which is similar to the other acts. Istinja or stijmar, which is cleaning the private parts. Remember, istinja is with water, stijmar is dry. Entering of the time of salat, which tayammum is being made, so you have to do it at the time of every salat if you need to do that. In the inability to use water, soil, what do you make it with? Soil, dirt, or dust? It's permissible, acquired lawfully, not to be pre-used, not burnt. It has dust that attaches to the hand. So when you touch the ground, there should be something coming on your hand. What is wajib for tayammum? It is wajib to say bismillah. It is excused if one omits it out of forgetfulness or ignorance, but not intentionally. How many farz are there for tayammum? What are they? There are five farz. They are to wipe the face other than the mouth, wiping the hands up to the wrist, maintaining the correct order. To maintain the continuity for tayammum done for the minor state of impurity, to specify intention for what tayammum is made for, whether for minor or major states of impurity or removal and najasa of the body. So this last one, if you're doing the tayammum for wudu, then you have to do it in order, right? First the face, then the hands. How many invalidators are there for tayammum? There are five. Whatever invalidates wudu, invalidates tayammum. Finding water, as soon as you find the water and you can use it, your tayammum breaks. Exiting of the time, remember that it lasts for the duration of one salat time. Ending of the cause of tayammum. Removal of a khuf if tayammum was made while wearing it. It sounds odd, but because it is a total replacement for wudu, the same ahkam apply to tayammum. Else, if it didn't, then it would be, think this is a deficient replacement. But it's a full replacement. So even if you just met tayammum with your hands, your face and your hands, and you put your khuf on before that, when you take it off, or even you take it off afterwards, you put it on and take it off after your wudu breaks. How does one purify something that has become filthy? If the purity is from, impurity is from a dog or a pig, that which is born from either of them or from one of them. This is a strange masala. It sounds strange. It's in Shafi books as well. It's born from a pig or both of them. Now, today, maybe you can say in genetic engineering that if a dog and a pig can produce another new creature. This is my understanding of it. I was listening to some Shaykh about this masala. Some Shafi, Shaykh Musa Ferb also points to it in his translation, Shafi Fiqh, as well. It should be washed seven times, and one of which is with dirt or soap. Today, soap takes the place of dirt. The reason that dirt was used like soap. If the impurity is other than a dog or a pig, it is washed seven times with water only. It is sufficient for the urine of a boy less than 2 years who has not eaten food, breastfed only, to drench it by sprinkling water from the hands. And the ground is purified, that which is similar to it. Other surfaces are purified by the removal of actual impurity with water. What is tahir and what is najis from animals? Animals and birds bigger than the size than a cat and whose flesh cannot be eaten are najis. What is smaller, such as a mouse, is tahir. Every carrion is impure except for a human being, fish, locusts, and that which does not have flowing blood like a scorpion. What is the ruling of that which exits from an Islamically edible animal, the urine and feces of Islamically edible animals, and everything that exits from it is tahir except for the blood and pus. However, a small amount of it is excused in salat. That wasn't mentioned last week, so that's a new masala. What is the ruling for that which exits an Islamically non-edible animal? Everything that exits from it is najis or impure except for human semen and milk. In salat, a small amount of blood and pus from non-edible animals and humans, but not pigs, if the animal is tahir, when it is alive or excused, are excused, sorry. Section on hayd and nifas. What is hayd? It is a natural bleeding that exists. So it's not, it's out of the normal from a healthy woman. So this excludes istihada, chronic bleeding, istihada from the private parts, excludes it. Other than birth, it is at specific intervals. There is no hayd before the age of 9, nor after the age of 50. It cannot occur during pregnancy. What is the minimum, maximum, general length of time of hayd? The minimum is a day and night. The maximum is 15. Generally, it is 6 or 7 days. What is the least tuhur between two hayds? The minimum tuhur is 13 days. So tuhur is the opposite of the hayd. It's the period monthly in the cycle, monthly cycle. It's the part that is not hayd called tuhur. Generally, it is the rest of the month, 29 or 30 days. There is no maximum limit for tuhur. What is nifas? It is the blood that comes out after birth or 2 or 3 days before birth. It is a maximum of 40 days and there is no minimum limit for it. What is haram in hayd nifas? It's haram to intercourse, pray salat, fast, do tawaf, recite the Quran, touch a mushaf, remain in a masjid. When the woman is purified from these states, she must make up the missed fast, but not the salat. And that's it. That's kitab. We'll go to kitab salat. Okay. I'm having trouble sharing screen. 1 second. Okay. Can you see the slide?
Yes.
Okay. Last week, the brother raised up, I think one of the brothers, he raised the issue of the distance of Musafir. The Muftabihi, or the one that the fatwa is upon in the Hanbali Mazhab, is 138 kilometers. However, recently scholars, that's the historical, that's the Madhab, as per all the books. However, sort of there's a revision of that, not just in the Hanbali Mazhab, it seems that across the all the Mazhab, if you look at the Hanafi Mazhab as well, they've got so many views, 54 miles. A lot of it is to do with reconciling English miles with Hijazi miles, Persian miles. There's sort of those sort of things going on as well. And also new information about specific places between two points. So there's hadiths that indicate Jeddah and Makkah and Asfan and other places. So when we're Sahab, the thing is that a lot of those things are one has to be cautious with. If a person wanted to be extra careful, that it's a new ijtihad or relatively recently ijtihad in the sense that it has a basis quite old from big ulama like Ibn Abdul Barr and others, rahmullah, from the other madahib. But it seems that the 80 kilometers become sort of standardized across the madahib, right? I'm just saying that. But the official view of the madhab is 138 or so and a bit kilometers. 86 miles for those maybe from the US, but 138 kilometers. The brother pointed that out last week. Generally, nobody, unless you're in specific Hanbali circles, maybe I guess we are in that, so these are discussed, but generally, because we have the other madahib, generally majority in, if you're talking in the masjid and so forth, so the other views, generally, that's the one that sort of you could say, promoted. But the 138, especially Hanbali circles, gets mentioned, and it is the official view of the madhab. So that was one thing. The second thing was regarding vinegar or wine vinegar. The word vinegar itself in English comes from French, I believe, and it means sour wine. So the issue of it becoming tahir is because in the fiqh book, what is mentioned is making wine, making vinegar from wine. Since it's haram to acquire wine, how could you make, right? And there's examples that the Hanbalis argue regarding this, the wine turned into being turned into, that the people of Medina could have done that when the hukum was given, but the hadith clearly state, even those orphans, their wine was not turned into vinegar. That they poured out their wine, the people had wine at home, they poured it all down the streets of Medina, down the drain. And so if that was a solution to turn into it, so the Hanbali position is quite strong in that sense. But I've read a few fatwas since then, and the Hanafi view is different. If it's changed, it's changed. Many ulama today, they basically take that ease to make it easy for people. How do you make vinegar without making it into wine? Because it's a step, right? So the first step to making vinegar is that you have to make it alcoholic. I don't know. I've been reading about vinegar a lot. So the things, you can go down the rabbit hole in these things, you know, because how do you even make vinegar without making it into wine? Because the middle stage is alcohol. It's a two-step process, and you have to do it that way. This is talking about wine vinegar, right? Making wine into vinegar. That you actually, then you have to buy the wine or acquire the wine, which is forbidden, right? So, but if you're making at home, you get apples, you go find a YouTube video and shows you how to make it within 10 minutes. And you can make it over several days, but so for example, if you make from apples or pineapple, right? Different vinegars you can make, and you have to acquire it and then, add yeast to it. And then like it goes through the fermentation phase. What's the first thing that comes out of it, the first stage before it goes into the vinegar stage, is that it becomes a pineapple wine or a apple cider, right? Then you do the next stage, which you let it continue. You add something from another vinegar, or you just leave it for a long time and it will become vinegar. So, you know, in essence, it really becomes vinegar. It really becomes alcoholic at some point. And then the final stage, all the alcohol is consumed by the bacteria, and there's no alcohol left in the actual final product. Regardless, the point being is that you cannot acquire wine. So the general fatwas I've seen is that even from the Shafi'is, who have the same view as well, I think the Malikis have the same view, that you just basically, like they, for ease, they said you can do it because there's actually no alcohol in the, just wanted to let somebody in. There's no alcohol in it, right? In vinegar. So, wallahu a'lam. I mean, there's some leeway there, I guess, in that sense, but definitely cannot make it yourself from wine and acquire wine for that, right? There was one masala regarding, and the third one was regarding when the cat comes, and even if it doesn't leave, right? Meaning that it goes somewhere, then eats something else, or is being away for a while and then comes back. No, even if it eats najas, then immediately drinks the water. The water's still fine. It's usable. It can drink it. And so there's nothing like you need to have a prolonged wait or between it, or it goes somewhere else, eats something else, cleans its mouth, and then comes. So that was the third masala I wasn't sure about last week, just to clarify. Any questions before we start, inshallah? So we're doing good time today, alhamdulillah. Any questions from last week or previous things? So what's coming up? Salat is coming up, inshallah, we'll start. But is there anything from before? Okay, let's start then. Yeah, what if the vinegar that is halal by the Islamic country? I think you mean like if the it's been certified in that country, or the country said it's halal? Yeah, I mean, the country is not a madhab, right? It's just a country. So if you're following the madhab, then it depends on how they did it. Does it meet the criteria of the madhab or not? So wallahu alam. And I see what you're saying in terms of accessibility, but I think out of generally not following one's own desires, wallahu ta'ala alam, if you're following the madhab, then the madhab would dictate it, right? You know, unless it's something that is so unavoidable in the country, something that is totally unavoidable in the country. Like, I'm trying to think of an example that would contradict the madhab, but it's unavoidable. So then you said, just follow the, well, I'll give you a simple example. If you're generally in a country that is, let's say you're in Turkey, Turkey is not an example. In Afghanistan, let's say, which is a majority Hanafi country. And all the masjid salat, their salats are being prayed by, you know, they pray asr very late. Then you'll go by the masjids that are there, the Hanafi masjids. You'll pray in the later time, even though according to your madhab, it's unavoidable, right? You'll have to pray at that time. So something like that. But I think if it's totally unavoidable, then it's fine. But Allah alam, it's too much haraj, like difficulty, right? But I think it's better, it's commendable if a person upholds their, sticks to a principled school. Wallahu alam. All right. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Nahmadu wa nasalli ala Rasooli Kareem. The chapter of Salat, Kitab al-Salat. The five Salats are obligatory upon every Muslim of legal capacity, except for anyone who is menstruating or experiencing postpartum bleeding. So, Hayd al-Nifas, they're excused from it, and there's no qadha upon them. Other than that, it's obligatory on every Muslim of legal capacity. So we started off with Tahara, we finished Tahara, all the main subjects. Just a question about the vinegar. No, it's allowed. It's allowed. I'll just, in a way, the process of making it, I guess if you control the process from beginning till end in your home, let's say, then is different to acquiring wine, because the wine encourages the buying and selling of wine, maybe. And this is why you're allowed to have vinegar because there's hadith encouraging its consumption, right? So it's not that vinegar is not haram. Actually, it's something praiseworthy. It's in Tibb al-Nabawi and so forth, and Rasulullah praised it. So it's not about vinegar, it's about how it was acquired. So if it's acquired from haram, that's the dilemma. Like if you're that middle stage where it's alcoholic, but it's not being made for that, it's not really serving the purpose of alcohol. Wallahu alam, I have to look a bit more into that, because my readings on vinegar is that all vinegar at some point was alcoholic. But no, it doesn't mean that it's, according to the Hanbali fiqh, it's not allowed. So we started with Tahara, which is a precondition, one of the preconditions of Salat. Salat itself means dua. Allah says in the Quran, Surah Tawbah, "Salli alayhim." What is the definition of Salat? That's the linguistic meaning, is a dua. What is the technical Sharia meaning of Salat? Salat is specific sayings and actions, starting with takbir and ending with salam. So this is a technical definition of Salat. There is five times Salat. So it says five times, not a sixth Salat. In the sense of, like, is witr considered the sixth salat? No, it's part of Isha. According to Hanafi fiqh, it's wajib. It's not fard. They put it lesser than fard. Fard salat is only five. And according to us, wajib salat is only five. It is not an obligation on the kafir in the sense of he's only ordered to do it after he accepts Islam, but he'll have to give hisab for that as well. Right, so when you become Muslim, he has to, of course, do it, but he's also, hisab will be there. Legally means that he's aqil and baligh, he's of sound mind and reached the age of puberty. And anyone who's whoever is in denial, abandons it, has committed apostasy. So someone who rejects salat, not someone who doesn't just do salat. He said there is no salat in wal-iyaz billah. He says that there's no salat in Islam. He leaves Islam. He's out of Islam. and he subjects it to the irtidad, which is in the Kitab al-Jinayat. Just, it's very, very important to understand this masala. There's a lot of abuse, and this has been happening for the last maybe 30 years, of the Hanbali position on someone leaving Salat out of laziness, that they become kafir. Someone belittling Salat, or someone not taking Salat seriously, not performing Salat. If you look at the Hanbali texts, they're very, very clear on it. And there's three conditions of someone becoming kafir for leaving Salat lazily or belittling Salat, like not giving it importance. The reason this masala is important, like I said, it's abused in this time. Many, many in the 90s, especially in our city here in Australia, this was used. Marriages were broken up because of this. Invalidly. Like, this is not a valid fatwa in the Hanbali mazhab. It's not a valid fatwa in any madhab. The Hanbalis are the most strictest in this, but they have so many shurut, conditions for this. So Dr. Mutlaq, in explanation of this, and in all his durus, he goes through this. The three conditions are for someone to be declared a kafir for not performing salat, is that he leaves a salat intentionally, amidan, aliman, knowing that it's fard, and it's a salat that he has to do, not while he's asleep, not forgetfully, not jahil of it. You know, even if one salat is left, right? And the timing of salat, like, is from, this is even, it is, applies to even one salat. Between, like, for example, Asr salat, the time of that till sunset, right? Number one, that's the first condition. The person's state is this: he's intentionally knowledgeable, without sleeping, not forgetfully, not ignorant, right? Even one salat. Number two, okay. So intentionally, amidan, intentionally, aliman, knowing that it's a hukam, it's fard, ghair namin, not, he's not a, he didn't, wasn't asleep, not and not forgetfully, and not jahil, not ignorant. Right, so five things there, right? Within that first condition. Second condition is that the imam, the ruler, or his deputy, or his appointed people, right, with state judicial authority, for example, a qadi or a governor, right, or someone is appointed, like a mayor of a town, is appointed by the ruler, the imam of the Muslims, right, the ruler of that land, the Muslim ruler, and he calls him and he refuses. You know, like, so the qadi, he's brought to the qadi, and the qadi says, you have to pray salat. Why aren't you praying salat? And he invites him, encourages him, and warns him about salat. And he, and then 3 days, this is kept on repeated to him, right? If after the 3 days, with all the conditions in him, the conditions of the ruler, right, it cannot be done by imam of a masjid, it cannot be done by a mufti, it cannot be done by a Sharia council in Melbourne, for example. It can't be done. It has to be done by a state authority with all those conditions. Like, a state authority, not something you can, if you're in a Muslim country, there's probably brothers here from Malaysia or something like that, you have qadis, like, appointed by the state, right? So they call, this is not something like self-appointed Sharia councils. I'm part of a Sharia council organization and so forth. Islamic organization, masjid committees, jama'as, they can't do these things. Let alone an individual calls another person. And we had this, this is serious. Sheikh Mutlaq, he goes through, these are extremely serious consequences for this. This person then is declared a murtad, and he refuses to return. Like, after all of that, knowing the consequences, you can warn a person about the severity of not praying salat, encourage them, warn them, etc. But that's as far as it goes. You cannot pass a judicial judgment. This is the prerogative of the ruler and his representatives, nobody else. No muftis, no maulana, no sheikh, no doctor, nobody. This is not of Islamic University. None of them can implement this rule. It's only the right of the ruler, because there's serious legal consequences for this. his nikah will break. If he's a murtad, his nikah breaks. If any children are born after that, this that he's declared murtad, there'll be children of zina. The zabiha, his zabiha is haram. There'll be no janazah prayed for him in the cemetery. He will not be buried in the cemetery of the Muslims. He cannot, his miras will not be given to his relatives. So this is extremely serious. That's why I'm mentioning this with the strongly that there's three conditions. One is about the characteristics of the person, that he did intentionally knowing and so forth, not in ignorance. Secondly, their ruler, and then also the ruler then for 3 days, or his representative deputies for 3 days, they call him and he refuses for 3 days. So that means he, at the end of it, what does he happen? He becomes murtad. The rules of irtidad apply to him, right? So this is a longer process of the first, right? One who rejects salat outright, he's a kafir. Rules of murtad apply to him. That's in another chapter. And same with this one. This is a longer process. He started off with lazy, being lazy and belittling or not giving importance to salat. But at the end of it, he comes in the same place as the first one, which is that he ends up with a murtad. It just exposes him through this process. Or as someone might realize the severity of what he's doing, the warnings will work. He'll make tawbah and he'll actually start praying salat if he's a true believer. I mean, this person is committed to not praying salat, that he will die for it. I mean, so he's not really not a Muslim based on everything that has been done. Adhan in Iqama. I hope you understand that masala, because the Hanbali position is abused today to the point of marriages are broken up because of this. And unfortunately, like, this is something we witnessed. My father, rahmullah, had to deal with cases like this as well, based on this misunderstanding. It doesn't make this leaving salat, abandoning salat, something small, but it's this outcome is not to be trifled with and not to be taken lightly, right? And it's not anybody's prerogative, especially in a non-Muslim country. Many of you might be living in non-Muslim countries or Muslim minority countries. It doesn't apply here. This hukam cannot be applied, right? The adhan and iqama are both communal obligation upon free men. It is recommended for individuals and during travel. There are not valid unless, sorry, I'm in trouble with the, in sequence, continuous as per custom, meaning there's no long gaps in between, with an intention by a Muslim and the male. So this is the conditions for adhan, and it's coming up on the next page. So the timing for the valid timing for the adhan. So adhan itself is mentioned in the Quran. Meaning the word, it means wa adhanu min Allahi wa rasuli. So it means a proclamation, right? The meaning of adhan. It's an announcement, and technically what it means is an announcement for salat at the beginning of its time or just before for fajr with specific words. It can be made for every jamaat, but once suffices. And the man doesn't, the male doesn't need to be baligh either. Right, next page. Also, the person should be sane, discerning, speaking, obviously, for obvious reasons, you'll be able to make talaffuz, articulate the words of adhan. Upright, even if only apparent. So upright meaning that the person is he's not addicted to he's adil, right? That he's upright, he's not addicted to minor sins, like he's continuously doing minor sins, or he doesn't commit major sins. And he generally observes upright and noble character, right? Why does he need to be upright? Because he's making shahada on behalf of the people or for the people, right? That the time has entered. Like, and he's also trusted with the timing of salat. So if he does it azan at the wrong time, then people's salat is being done at the wrong time. And also, I remember I was overseas in one Muslim country. So even when they want to change the street light, remember the muadhin usually climbs up to a high place or a minaret and gives adhan in the old days. So then if he's up there, and usually, even I was went to Palestine once, and you know, if you see in many towns and villages, the adhan masjids are the tallest buildings in the horizon, right? So the minarets are very tall and muadhin climbs, so the voice reaches further. Now, if someone is not upright, then when he goes up there, he can see all the houses in the courtyards. So it was one country they needed to change the street light. And so they had to, you know, they before they do that, they knock on all the neighborhood's doors and tell them that a man's going to climb up because they can see inside the house, see the ladies. So this is another reason why the person should be upright and called after the time enters, except for Fajr, which is valid after midnight. So there's Adhan for Fajr. There's a first Adhan for Fajr in the middle of the night. So you see Medina Munawwara, generally there's two Adhan that are done there. The Adhan compromised the 15 phrases without tarjih. I don't think I need to explain to you the Adhan in detail because you probably heard it five times a day, being going to the masjids and your whole life. The Iqamah comprised 11 phrases without doubling. What's tarjih? What's tarjih? Tarjih is that the muadhin, before he audibly says the adhan, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, he quietly says it himself, right? So the actual, so he doesn't need to do that, right? But he can do it. He does the adhan himself quietly, then he does it loudly. The iqama comprises 11 phrases without doubling. Remember that in there's different riwayat on this, that Abu Mahzura, his riwayat is that it doesn't double. And also his riwayat tells you about tarjih, about reading quietly than loudly. While Imam Ahmad didn't select it, and Imam Ahmad gave preference to the hadith of Bilal radiallahu anhu, because he was the muadhin of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam while traveling and while in resident. However, both tarjih is permissible in adhan along with doubling in iqamah. So if you do the doubling iqamah, the Hanafis, they do the doubling iqamah. So when they do iqamah, they Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Shalla ilaha illa Shalla ilaha illa Shalla ilaha. It's adhan plus qad qamati salah, qad qamati salah in the middle, right? So you can do that. It's permissible in the as well. But the preference given is for the adhan of Bilal and the iqamah of Bilal radiallahu anhu. After the adhan is made, it's permissible to exit the masjid without an excuse on intent of return. Right, so it's not permitted. It's haram to leave the masjid adhan. You're in the masjid adhan is called, and the salat should be prayed momentarily, and for no reason a person leaves, right? Unless someone has some excuse, there's an emergency, obviously, a parent calls and it's, you know, they're desperate or there's something. Another reason the ulama give is that if you're going to pray in another masjid, so you might be here, you know that in 10, 15 minutes you're going to make it to another masjid. Right, you got to drive somewhere. He said, I'll just pray that masjid because you know the timing of the masjid. Jamaat, they might have fixed the salat time, let's say, Dhuhr at 2 o'clock. Adhan here is 1:30. But yeah, if I stay here, sunnah is everything, then I'm going to be late and I have some work there to do. As long as you know that you're going to make it into that other masjid and you pray this, that's fine. Calling the adhan in the, so this is a masala, calling the adhan in the right ear of a newborn and the iqama in the left is recommended. So this is, although not related to salat, but it's adhan in the right ear and the iqama in the left ear of a newly born. And who used to do this? Umar ibn al-Aziz, rahmatullahi alayhi, and it's considered mustahab. All right. So now we will go through the acts of salat. Remember, this is a compact matan, so it's very, very short, and it doesn't have all the masail in it. So it's giving a very – I'll get to that in a moment. Inshallah. You can make a separate jamaat. So the question was, can you make it? You can make a separate jamaat if you ask permission of the imam. So in our madhab, you have to ask the permission of the imam to make a separate jamaat before the time of the jamaat. Without his permission, you shouldn't be praying another, or I can't remember whether you're allowed to or is valid or not, but you should take permission from the imam. Can break the salat or your I don't know which hadith you're referring to, but as for the breaking the salat, if there's an emergency, obviously, there's an emergency, I think you should not break the salat because Allah says in the Quran, don't annul your amal. So there's explicit instruction that if you started an amal, you should maintain the amal to the end. It's better. But if you have an emergency, that's a different story. All right. Shurut, arkan, wajibat, and sunan. Shurut is a plural of shart. Shart means condition or precondition, prerequisite. Arkan is a plural of rukan, means a pillar. Wajibat is a plural of wajib. Sunan is a plural of sunnah. The six prerequisites or shurut of the validity of prayer include purity from a hadith. So we learned that already, right? And shart means in Arabic a sign. What is a shart? Technically, it means its non-existence of a shart is a non-existence of the act, right? And the same definition is there for rukn as well. So if shurut and arkan don't exist, the act doesn't exist. There's no act, right? If you pray the whole salat and the ruku is missing, that's not a salat. So that's a rukn, right? Pillar. Shart is the fard that is before the act. If wudu is not there, there's no salat. You have water and everything and you need to make wudu, you pray salat, that's not a salat. So the absence of the shart and the rukn invalidates or the act doesn't exist in it. It actually doesn't exist. And if you, and the shart is before the act and rukn is within that, but they're both fard. And you cannot miss them, even forgetfully, if you miss them, you'll have to repeat the wudu. If you forget wudu, forgetfully doesn't, you still have to, you have to repeat your prayer that you've done with that, or the absence of that. Or for example, you didn't do the wudu properly, right? Same with rukun. There's no such a sahu for shart or rukun, put it that way. There's no, you can't make it up except by redoing the act and then fulfilling this precondition. The wajibat is different from shart and similar to rukun in salat. In that it, if you forget it to do it, the whole salat, and you finish the salat, not intentionally, you know, rukn, if you leave it, like if you forget the wajibat, then you can do sajda sahwa to make up for it, right? Sunnah doesn't break the salat for omitting it, but one is rewarded for doing it. So tahara was already mentioned. We went through the whole chapter of tahara. The time of salat is not mentioned in this book. Like I said, this book is a compact matan, so it doesn't mention all the details. As you go in more detailed books, you mention detail. But just briefly, dhuhr is, somebody wants to give the timing of dhuhr. Anybody? What time, when does dhuhr start and end? The length of the object after zawal. What does that mean? The length of the object after zawal. Like simplify the shadow. But what does that mean? 15 minutes after zawal. Okay. So the timing is not that long. So zawal is midday. And from the time that the sun is towards the east, meaning towards the morning, the sun rise, and before it goes to the other end, it's only about 5-10 minutes, right? It's only, it might be even less than that, right? Some say 5 minutes, 15 minutes might be a bit long, right? So as soon as the sun sort of moves from the middle, which is Zawal, towards the west, like it only moves like a degree, like literally a few minutes. If it moves that direction, it's Dhuhr time. And whatever shadow is there, and I know what the brother's saying, but just we need to put it like into an easier, whatever shadow was there at dhuhr, right? Sorry, at midday. So let's say they, because unless you're living, maybe some of you live on the equator, but in Australia, we live very south, some in North America live far north in Europe as well. So whatever shadow, let's say there's, you have a 10 centimeter object and you have a 5 centimeter shadow at right at midday, right? Asr time, then Zuhr time will start after the declination towards the west, just after Zawal, a few minutes after Zawal. It will continue till when the shadow of the object, that 10 centimeter object, is 10 centimeters plus whatever was there at Dhuhr. That's the start of Asr. What we call in the apps the Shafi time, right? That's the start of Asr, Asr time. Maghrib is after. Maghrib is after. Sunset, Jazakallah khair. And Isha is, I'm just telling you the beginning time, the book doesn't contain any time. The Isha is, just be careful with the apps. I actually observed it here in Melbourne that I could see the sun and it says Maghrib time on the apps. So the way they calculate is half the disk is above the horizon. The apps are, many of the apps are inaccurate in their time salat. So, I mean, if you're a Muslim country or the masjid, generally they make adhan, iqama, time between, a little bit time in between sometimes. You should be okay. But I'm saying if you're praying by your home sometime by yourself, just be careful with apps to pray right on the time, beginning time. And Isha is? What time is Isha? Start? As per the madhab? When complete dark? No. Sort of. Obviously, it's darker than Maghrib time. When it's all pitch black, no. That's the same as complete dark. You guys can't see each other's messages. So it's when the red light, red disappears on the horizon. The red twilight disappears. Not the white. It's still light on the horizon. It's not completely black. That's not. As for the madhab, in the Shafi'i school as well, in the Hanbali school as well, it's when the red redness in the sky disappears. It could still have, like, if you look at the western horizon and the eastern horizon, western is where the sun is setting, right? So there'll be a redness. The redness will gradually get less and less. It'll be orange, then yellow. When that orange and red and yellow, when that disappears, right, then some say it's only the red, not the yellow as well. There's another discussion about that. But let's say that what only remains is white light. And in the east, right, where the sun rose in the morning, it's more darker, right? It'll be more darker. One horizon will be a blue, light blue without any redness in it, right? That's a time for Isha, the start of Isha time. And the time of Isha continues right up to Fajr, and the Fajr time is when? When does Fajr start? Time starts. Although you should pray before midnight, it was... Yeah, so the first third of the night, Jazakallah khair, Brother Ahmed. So he says, I was. Okay. Yeah, I didn't see. Yeah, I'll just read your answers in a second. So the preferred time for Isha, I'm not going through the preferred times, just giving the beginning time. So, you know, you guys should pray at the beginning of your time. We should all pray at the beginning of each salat time. As opposed to praying the later ones, because this book doesn't contain detail. Sheikh Mutlaq, when he teaches, he doesn't go through any of this. He said it'll come in the next book. But I'm just mentioning now because we might not get a chance to go through this again. The first third of the night, divide the night into three parts. Fajr time starts while the white line on the horizon. So the white light on the horizon across in the eastern horizon. The white light is just the sunlight. It just spreads across. It's not a line in the way we understand a line. Because when you say line, you're doing a literal reading of the book. The white across the horizon. What's called false dawn, which is before that. The false dawn is nothing to do with the sun. So false dawn is a cloud of dust that rolls around the orbits the sun. So it's rise and sets like celestial bodies, like the planets, right? So you can't see it in cities, big cities. You have to go out into the country here in Melbourne. I took my students out 4 o'clock in the morning. They really loved me for that, to show them what it was. I was in one island in the Pacific, and the brothers, I worked them up. They loved me for that. I worked them up to 2 o'clock in the morning because we were on the deck of a ship and it was pitch black and you can see it very clearly. The fake Fajr. So it's called the fake Fajr. The reason why people in the past would have seen it, that very clear skies, no city light pollution, no city lights and so forth, and very clean air as well. So they would have seen that false dawn, and they might have mixed up. The way you know the difference, it says a vertical line. So when you're reading the book, it says vertical line. In our mind, it's like a thin line that stretches up. It doesn't look like that. It looks like, when I saw it, it looks like almost like a pyramid. on a slight angle, like it's sort of like a hue. The way I can describe it is on the horizon, when it's setting, it looks like there's a high beams over the horizon. So if you're driving country and a car is in the distance and it's over the horizon, you'll see a light coming up, but the light is very localized, right? So it's not equally spread across the horizon evenly, which is the sunlight that's coming. The sunlight that's when sunlight is rising, it's stretched across the whole horizon. I hope the differentiation is clear. That's a Fajr time, and of course, Fajr time ends with sunrise. So the entry of the time, concealment of the awrah, the part of the body that needs to be covered, avoidance of impurities, meaning on the splace, on the body, and on the clothes, facing the qibla. Facing the Qibla, making an intention. All of these are pre-salat. Its location is is the heart. The reality is a resolution to do something and is not waived in any situation, right? You have to maintain the intention in the sense of through the whole salat. Like once you decide you're going to do salat and you start the salat, in the middle, you should not say, oh, I'm going to break my salat, maybe not break my salat, in the sense of that you sort of make there's doubt about whether you're going to continue salat or not. Once you start having that, you have to repeat your salat. The intention should be maintained in a general sense like that. Its prerequisites of the intention are Islam, sanity, discernment. We read that in Tahara already in other acts. The time to make it is at the onset of the worship or just before it. All the other actions are, all of these things have an alternative. Have an alternative, right? If you don't have water, you know, there's an alternative. Or you can even make an extreme situation mentioned last week, you can do it without it, and so forth. You know, like salat missed in its time can be done later, you know, outside of qada can be done, et cetera, et cetera. However, intention, there is no replacement for it. Intention must be there in every act. A woman praying in a woman praying in jeans is revealing. Has she fulfilled the awrah? I would assume it is. Is it the best way to probably pray? I don't know. That's a good question. I should check that. I might make a note of that. Generally, ladies in Masjid, you know, like, we don't know. Okay, mashallah. Jazakallah khair, Ahmed. He said that Sheikh John Starling says that that it is showing the body form is fine. So it's still the awrah is covered. So the awrah means that the body part is covered, even though it's not a good way to probably... it's not... he says that... Jazakallah khair, Ahmed, for that. That it's not modest to wear jeans for women. True, 100%. Barakallahu feekum. Well, that saves me time, so I don't have to make a note of it. I'll take your word for it, inshallah. Barakallahu feekum. The 14 arkan or rukuns of the pillars of salat are standing in fard, the qiyam in the fard salat. So in nafil prayers, you can do sitting down. The reward of that is halved. Right. And if you're sick and you're unable to stand, then you can also pray sitting down and you'll get the full reward because that's you have an uzr. You can pray sitting down, and Sheikh Mutlaq suggests something nice that you can pray nafil prayers sitting down. So, for example, after dhuhr, you have some time and you want to read some Quran. What you can do is because in our madhab, we can read the Quran from the mushaf in salat, right? We can hold it or we can have it on a stand next to us. And you know, so you can what he suggests you pray sitting down, because you're going to sit down and read the Quran anyway. You might as well put it in front of you, pray it, make the niyat, pray sitting down, read from the mushaf, and then you do ruku and sajd and so forth. So you get the reward of reading, making tilawat Quran in salat. You join in, you get more reward, inshallah. Takbiratul ihram. The opening takbir, the hands are not sunnah. The hands, takhrul lazim, are sunnah. They're not a rukun. They're not a pillar. So if you just stand and say Allahu Akbar, your salat is valid. Allah, you should not leave a sunnah. But if you didn't raise your hands at all, you've left the sunnah, but not a rukun. So they're two separate acts. They're raising the hands is sunnah, while saying that takbir al-tahrim is. Bowing, ruku', raising from it, getting up from it, straight standing up straight. Sajda, raising from the sajda, sitting between the two sajdas, tranquility. So you can't just sort of, you can't do sajda like up without a pause in the middle. That seating between the two sajdas is a rukun. You can't do Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar like that. We got to do dua in the middle anyway. So you can't just go up like that. There's an act to do in between. There's a pause there, like a sitting. Tranquility in actions. So as for reading the Fatiha, not one shadda is to be omitted. Not one letter is to be omitted. The minimum bowing is that one touches the knees, like he leans over, bends over until he touches the knees. The sunnah is to do like a 90 degrees, like flat, that if you put a glass of water on the back, you know, that'll stay. So it's like a 90 degrees, like a flat back, that's sunnah. But the minimum is that a person can reach, touch their knees. Not that you should do that, but this is the bare minimum, which is considered technically a ruku', right? Sajda is on the seven limbs, right? So it's on the two feet, the two knees, like your toes should be on the ground, your knees should be on the ground, your hands, and what else? And your forehead and nose together. So, yeah. Tumanina, which is tranquility number 10, is that there's a stillness. A pause, and you settle in the action. Your feet should be on the ground. So, but what it says is that your toes should bend, so, and face in the qibla, and Allahu a'lam. So should all the toes be pointing? I'm assuming that just the foot, feet has to, the limb is taken as one, Allahu a'lam. Tumanina, to settle, it's more than khushu. Khushu is to concentrate in prayers. Tumanina is to settle, to be tranquil in, which is a sub part of it. The final tashahud, these are arkan, right? These are arkan. The final tashahud, which suffices, is the pillar, which is, oh Allah, send your prayers upon Muhammad, after which is sufficient for the first tashahud, which is all greetings are for Allah, peace be upon you, O Prophet, and the mercy of Allah, peace be upon us and upon the righteous servants. So basically what suffices as a minimum tashahud for the last tashahud, attahiyyatu lillahi, salamun alayka ayyuhan nabi wa rahmatullah, salamun alayna wa ala ibadillahi salihin, ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa anna muhammadur rasulullah, allahumma salli ala muhammad, allahumma salli ala muhammad, for the salawat at the end. That's it. That's the minimum tashahud. So there's a complete, the kamil, we know that attahiyyatu lillahi wa salawat wa tayyibat, assalamu alayka ya nabi wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, assalamu alayna wa ala ibadillahi salihin, ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, till the end, allahumma salli ala muhammadin wa ala ali muhammadin kama sallaita ala ibrahim wa ala ali ibrahim. This is the complete, right? But this is the, what's mentioned here is the bare minimum to be considered wajib. What's happening here? Just doing it in a... Okay, it's done it in a different order. I'll have to go to the end. Oh, no. Okay. Just bear with me a minute. Okay. So I bear witness that there is no deity worthy worship but Allah, and that Muhammad is the messenger of Allah, sitting for it, and the two salams at the end. And to do this in order, sequence. And rukun, if you leave it forgetfully, the act is invalid, right? Wajib, there are eight wajib. And if you notice all the wajibs, except for the last one, they're all to do with words, right? All takbirs other than the opening takbir. Remember, the opening takbir is from the arkan. One of the ways to remember, Dr. Mutlaq says, for the arkan, one of the ways that he says to memorize it is to group them into groups of four. So if you go, I won't go to the previous slide. So if you can group them into, four groups. Remember that the malaika, they have certain positions they pray in. Some are in sajda since they've been created. Some are in the ruku since they've been created. Some are standing since they've been created. Some are sitting. These four positions are positions of ta'zim, respect. This was done for kings in the past and still is done today. Sajdas, of course, you know, people still bow incorrectly in certain cultures, but it was there allowed in previously, and sajdas were done out of respect previously. Standing is still there, and sitting. So these are four positions of respect. So if you isolate these four positions, and within them, you will see that the first three acts are what? Standing, takbir, and fatiha. That's in the first. So there's three actions within one. Then in ruku, going for ruku, getting up from it. What was it? What's the third act? And settling. SubhanAllah. So you got the first, the standing, takbir, and fatiha. Then you got bowing, raising, and getting straight, sitting up straight from it. That's the next three. So although Dr. Mutlaq, he writes poetry, and he summarizes on usually into two verses. Everything that he does in every chapter, pretty much, he summarizes into two verses, so it's easy to memorize. But he said this 14 is too many to memorize in a poem. So he said you can memorize them like this. Three in qiyam, while you're standing. Qiyam, takbir, fatiha. Then in bowing, there's three. These are the arkan. Bowing, ruku itself, the act of ruku, raising from it and getting standing up straight. So that's to do with ruku. Then making sajda, raising from the sajda and sitting up between the two sajdas after sajda, the first sajda, right? Tranquility is a separate action that applies to in all the actions. So we can separate that. The final tashahud, right? And he gave the, so we'll have to do this again. Just give me a second. So, and sitting for it, and the two salams, and the sequence. So we can put the sequence together with tranquility. So those two can be separate, but basically then you have these last three, the tashahud, the sitting for it, and the two salams. Is that clear? Is that understood? Like they're grouping them into four groups of three and the two, just to memorize them so we know the arkan. The reason is if you know them and you know the wajibat, then you can sort of... you'll know when to do sajd sahwa, right? And when not to do sajd, when you don't need to do sajd sahwa, or when you've broken your salat. The sunnah's recommended statements and actions do not invalidate if they are abandoned. So notice that these only mention the sunnah statements, not actions. The dua istiftah. Dua istiftah is the opening dua. Does anybody know the dua istiftah? Somebody wants to type it, I guess. Or at least the start of it. The first word of it. The opening prayer after takbir, when you start salat, what's the first thing that you recite? Subhanak. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jazakallah khair. Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdika wa tabaraka wa ta'ala jadaka wa la ilaha ghayruk. So this is one dua. In books, this is the preferred dua for fard salat in the Hanbali madhab. However, there are many, many other dua. What's a Shafi'i dua? Does anybody know? Any Malaysians here? Jazakallah khair, Ahmed. Inni wajahtu. Yeah, inni wajahtu wajli fatar. So this is another dua. There are other duas from Ali radiallahu anhu and other sahaba radiallahu anhu, the duas that if you go to the books, it's good. Those duas we can do in nafl prayers, so it's not totally to disregard them, but this is the considered the afdal, the most preferred. However, this is a sunnah, it's not compulsory. Seeking refuge, meaning a'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim, saying bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, saying ameen, reciting a chapter surah. When do you recite? In fajr, Jum'ah, Eid, Nafl prayers, or Nafl prayers are two rakats. These are all two rakats. the first two rakats of Maghrib and the four rakats, Zuhr and Asr. There's only three rakats, the three salats that have four rakats in them. Zuhr, Asr, and Maghrib. The first two rakats you recite surah, the other ones you don't. Right? Everything else you recite a surah in. Audible recitation by the imam. The imam reading loudly in Maghrib and Isha and Fajr is a sunnah. If he doesn't do it, the salat is still valid. And if he reads loudly in Asr, right, there's no such a sahu. The salat is valid, but it's khilaf sunnah. It's not the right thing to do. One shouldn't do it because it's not the way Rasulullah prayed. But the salat will be valid because he's omitted the sunnah of reading loudly or softly. The statement, mil as-sama, mil al-ardi, mil al-mashita, mil shayin ba'd, which is the Rabbana wa lakal hamd. So the imam, an individual should read this, but the follower should say only Rabbana wa lakal hamd. Right? The follower, after Sami Allahu liman hamida, should say only Rabbana wa lakal hamd. The imam should say both. Sami Allahu liman hamida, Rabbana wa lakal hamd. The individual should say both. Right? And the individual and the imam should say the longer version. Although Rabbana wa lakal hamd sufficed, but he should say the longer dua. The reason is there's a Rasulullah specifically said when the imam says Sami Allahu liman hamida, you should say Rabbana wa lakal hamd. He didn't say more. But in other narrations that he mentioned about the person themselves saying the longer du'as, and there's other variations of these du'as in a hadith. But this is the preferred one according to Imam Ahmad. If you say more than one tasbih, one is minimum, subhanahu rabbi al-a'la, to say more than that is a sunnah. Asking forgiveness. What's asking forgiveness referring to? Between the two sajdas, Rabbi ighfirli, oh Allah, forgive me. Right? There's a dua between and supplication in the last tashahud. Supplication? Is that what it's? Supplication in the last tashahud at the end. And qunut in witr. Dua qunut in witr. Witr is done every night. The dua qunut is sunnah. If it was omitted, the witr will still be valid. Right? There are 45 recommended actions and manners. And according to Dr. Mutlaq, some imams have said, yeah, to pray at the end, for asking forgiveness at the end. Is that what you're referring to? After tahiyyat and salawat, and to make dua after it? Yeah, that's what I understood as well. That supplication in the last tashahud. Number 10 is referring to dua after, before salam. So there's very, 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 you know, I try to say this outside of salat, you forget it. Allah minni a'udhu min adhab jahannam wa min adhab al-qabr wa min fitnati mahya wal mat min sharri fitnati al-masih ad-dajjal, right? You can extend the salawat in. Okay, so that was one dua. No, if someone breaks a salat, they don't have to do nafal salat. If they break it, they don't have to repeat it. Right, in the Hanafi fiqh, yeah, there has to be a repetition of it. You don't have to make up that prayer. There's no qada due upon you. Right, the other dua is Rasulullah taught Abu Bakr Siddiq radiallahu anhu, Allahumma inni dhalamtu nafsi dhulman kathira wa inna la yaghfiru dhunuba illa anta faghfir li maghfiratan min indika wa rahmani innaka antal ghafurur rahim. These duas at the end of salat. So there are 45 recommended action not mentioned in this book. In Ajiba, next week I'll go through some of them. I think about 30 or so of them. But you'll have to just study more books to get all these details of the recommended actions. So for example, what are the recommended actions? For example, raising your hands with the first takbir or the two takbir before and after ruku. Hanbalis don't raise their hands for the when you're coming up from the second rakat, as per the madhab. Also, the arm shouldn't be tucked in ruku. Should be spread out a bit in sajda. The elbow should not be on the ground, tucked in and so forth. So there's a many, many actions of salat. None of the sunnahs of salat that are not mentioned here. He said there's 45, others say 55, others even go higher than that as well. It is disliked for anyone praying to turn, right? This is talking about someone turning their head. not about turning their body. If you turn your body away from the Qibla, it breaks your salat. Closing their eyes. Ibn Qayyim rahmatullah alayhi says about this, something's wrong with my computer today and it's got a life of its own, subhanAllah. Yes, it's this mouse. Yeah. Okay. Closing the eyes. Okay, so you're asking about the actions. Because the actions are so many, there's not one brother, many brothers are asking different questions about different actions. My advice is next week we'll go through the ajuba. We'll spend a little bit of time. Actions are listed there of salat. But just for some of your, should the feet be joined in salat? Meaning, are you talking about the next person? There's no requirement to do that. In such that are your own feet? No, you're actually supposed to separate them throughout the whole salat. Your feet are supposed to be separate, even in sajd as well. So they should be separate. Raising your index finger. So the as per the text, so at-tahiyyatu lillahi, rahmatullah, salam ibadallah, shalallahu illallah. So just on that, four times the name of Allah occurs, you raise your hands. Some say that Allahumma salli and Allahumma barik, raises in six, two times. But four is what the books say, that four times the fingers raised, and then it's dropped down till the end of salat. So it's dropped down. Some say that to drop it down, like pointing towards the Qibla, they say pointed. I mean, the book doesn't say that, it just says drop it down. So, you know, how you interpret it, drop down. I asked one of the Dr. Mutlaq's teacher, he asked him, he said, what the book says is the madhab, right? It's in Kuwait when I tried to get him to show it to me, he goes, go by the book. He wouldn't show it to me. Like, I think he was trying to teach me something, which is that you should study the text. I'm not Imam Ahmed, and neither is my explanation Imam Ahmed. You are a student of knowledge. You should go to the books and understand what the books are. So I hope that's clear about the finger. So four times the thing has moved. As for closing your eyes, Ibn Qayyim rahimahullah says, although generally it's considered, it's makruh. However, Ibn Qayyim rahimahullah mentions that if the place is disturbing you, like there's so much going on that you can't concentrate, then you may close your eyes. But in a normal circumstance, a normal masjid or in your house, you shouldn't close your eyes. That's not the way to pray. You know, don't pray towards a TV screen. You know, so what else was there? Just make sure that as for the pebbles unnecessarily moving, the rule to remember is that if you are praying, amazingly, 1 hour 15 already, subhanAllah. If you are praying and somebody from outside, if just remember this rule, if somebody from outside sees you that you are, you look like you're not in salat, right? That means you're doing excessive actions. Like, for example, someone pulls out their mobile, slides, does 2, 3, 4 actions, right? It doesn't look like you're even in salat. Yesterday I was leading salat in the masjid. My microphone was here and it fell off. Now, if I go down to reach for it, pull it up, bring it here, right? I just raise my voice so the ladies section can hear. But like it'll become, I'll have to do so many extra actions. Yeah. So so then what I did, but when I got down to tahiyyat in the second rakat, I put my hand and pulled it out and dropped it because I'm dragging the mic and making noise with it, disturbing everybody. So a little bit of action like that just dropped because it's disturbing me, like just to remove it. But like to pick it up and plug it in, and you know, like it was a bit. I thought I might do too many actions. So excessive. The rule is, if someone looks from outside, doesn't think you're in salat. Like you're not doing actions of salat. Abandoning salat isn't kufr iqadi. No, not necessarily, because it's between you and Allah at the end of the day. These are the external actions here. So, but as per law, we cannot pass the judgment, right? Unless the qadi has done all the steps, then they have they follow into the category of murtad. All right, let's move on. Sajd sahwa. The sajd sahwa, the prostration forgetfulness, is sunnah due to Well, apply that rule that I just told you regarding fixing up the hairband. Sunnah due to forgetfully making a legislated statement in the wrong place. So, for example, someone reads Fatiha in Ruku, in Sajda reads the Shahud. I'm giving just these examples. They're not external from the action of Salah. They're part of Salah, but they're just done in the wrong place. You'll have to do Sajda Sahu. Sunnah due to, this is Sunnah to do. Then it's permissible if a Sunnah act is abandoned. So someone is very particular about doing all the Sunnah acts of Salat and he misses it once and it's permissible for him to Sajda Sahu just to make up for it. But it's not compulsory. It's wajib if a bowing, prostration, standing or sitting is added, right? Another ruku, another sajda or something, is it added? So these are the main ones, but also if one forgets a wajib, not intentionally, right? If you miss out a wajib intentionally, a salat breaks. It's not a valid salat. So if you forget a wajib, which we went through before, or increase an act of salat not in its place, increase ruku or sajda, as is mentioned here, or do salam before the end of salat, if doubt the number of rakats, just this point, a 100,000 salats. Is it? That's if you miss 100 years of, no, you have to do qada salat. Qada umri, you have to do it. As for the madhab, you have to do it. Well, you give an exaggerated, say like 10 years or 20 years, you'll have to do 10, 20 years of qada salat. If someone has missed 10 years or 20 years, people have done it. I know people have done it. So you have to do qada. The sin is lifted by making tawbah of missed salat, but the debt is still left. So where were we? So I might leave the questions a little bit because it keeps interrupting me. If you are praying, if you have a sajda sahwa to do and you do salam, right? I think it mentions here. Yeah, the prayer is invalidated if the obligatory prostration forgetfulness is abandoned. So if you have to do it and you intentionally abandon the sajda sahwa, the salat is invalidated, the time which is before the salam. If someone gets up abandoning or forgetting the tashahud, they're obliged to return to perform it. Returning is dislike if they're, so this is a different masala. So just before this, I turn to this one. If someone doesn't do sajda sahwa is before salam and doesn't do it, right, even intentionally, then they're sitting there and then they said, all right, I got to do sajda sahwa. Then they do the sajda sahwa, then they do tahiyyat again, tahiyyat, salawat till the end again, right? So this is when they leave the sajda sahwa, even intentionally, but then they realize and then they do the sajda sahwa, but they do it after salam, they do tahiyyat and everything like they're doing the whole end of salat again. Okay. If someone gets up abandoning or forgetting the tashahud, let's say you're in the second rakat of a 4-rakat salat, you miss the tashahud, they're obliged to return to performing it. Returning is disliked if they have. There's 4 states here, like either the person is about to stand up, so nothing happens, he just quickly sits down, not complete got up, it's wajib for him to return. So he hasn't stood up yet, right? So he's still on the way up, he realizes he goes back. It's wajib for him to return. Stood but no qira'ah. He stood up, but he hasn't recited Fatiha yet in the next rakat. It's makruh to return. If he went back, his salat will be fine, but reduces the reward. It's not the best way to do it. What he should do is, in that case, is he should start Fatiha and do sajda sahwa. If he starts qira'ah of Fatiha, if he returns, it's haram, and it breaks the salat if he returns. All right? I hope that's clear. So I'll read this. Returning is disliked if they have stood completely and impermissible if they've begun recitation. If they return from beginning of recitation, the prayer is invalidated, except for that of someone forgetful or ignorant. So if he forgets and he goes back down or he is ignorant, that's a different. If someone produces a hadith or speaks even if forgetfully, so if someone produces a hadith, hadith means he goes into state of impurity, then passes wind. Or speaks even if forgetfully, these things are, they'll break this up. Audibly laughs. Qahbaha, like he cracks up laughing. He makes a very audibly laughs. Or clears a throat without need, producing two or more letters. Like, you know, says something like that. But it causes two letters. A is a letter in Arabic. Ha is a letter. Kha is a letter. Ah. It's like someone clears it, but they don't need to do it. Like, to clear that. I'm just giving examples of made-up sounds. But similar sort of things, but he doesn't need to do it. And it's ah is two letters, like it's Hamza and Kha, right? Or he makes two sounds. Then this breaks the salat. It is invalidated, but not if they are asleep and then speak, right? So if somebody is sleep, remember that slight sleeping that he dozed off? Remember if he sleep, fully sleep, if he sleeps, sorry, forgive me, in standing and in sajda, slight sleeping. So he dozes off and then he speaks in salat, right? This is excluded from all this. Weeps out of reverential fear, like out of fear of Allah, right? You can cry for many things, but if he cries out of fear of Allah, then he's, no smiling does not, only audible laughing breaks salat. Don't think of funny things in salat. Anyway, you know the hadith about this, that Sahaba radiallahu anhum, they saw the blind man walking in a ditch. There's a ditch and he saw them walking. I mean, they're human beings. So you love Sahaba for their sacrifices, for their iman. They were not supermen, they had super iman, you know. And so when they saw him walking, they could see him coming and they saw the ditch and he fell in, they cracked up. And the Rasulullah SAW told him to go make wudu again as a sort of punishment. The Hanafis say that this wudu is not just salat, it breaks the wudu as well. And the other madahib said, no, it breaks the salat, not the wudu. This was like as a ta'dib to train them. Radiallahu anhum. Or and overcome by coughing, sneezing, or yawning, these are excused, right? Anyone who doubts in a pillar of or a number of rakat is to act upon certainty. That is the least amount. Doubt has no effect after its completion. Similarly to tahara we mentioned last week, if you think you've done three or four, you assume you've done three. And then you build on that, do sajda sahwa at the end. All right? Easy. Easy way to deal with it. Recommended prayers. The most virtuous... The most virtuous physical voluntary acts are after military service and seeking knowledge, voluntary prayer. So the first, according to Madhab, jihad is first. I'm talking about combat, and seeking knowledge is second, and then nafal prayers. The most emphasized of which is eclipse prayer. Some say it's wajib, followed by seeking the rain, istisqa. So the kusuf prayer, then istisqa, tarawih. And then the witr. The least of which is one rakat, and the most is 11 rakats. So two, two, twos, and one at the end. The least complete, the adna kamal, meaning the minimum perfect witr is what? Is the minimum perfect. Ideally, like you can do 3, 5, 7, 9, 11. Absolute minimum is one. But if you want the minimum perfection, then you do 3, 2, and 1. But you can do it one salam. You can do 3 in 1 hit, like one with what without. Doing salam. Its period is between Isha and Fajr. It mentions the Taraweeh there. Does it mention the, and Qunut is mentioned there. That, I won't go through the dua. If you pause the slide, sorry, apologies. I'm having trouble with these slides today. So this is a dua here of, so he mentions the both duas, the Hanafis that do this dua, and the second dua, Allahumma hadina fi man hadayt, and the Hanafis generally, Allahumma inna nasta'inuka wa nasta'inuka wa nastaghfiruka wa natubu ilayka wa nu'minu bika wa natawakkal alayk wa nuthni alayka al-khayr kullahu wa nashkuruka wa la nakfur. So these duas there, these all mentioned the sunnah. You can do both of them together. For Qunut, and he mentioned them together. He mentioned detail why, because he wants you to start doing worship, right? So this is the Bidayatul Abid. So we should memorize these du'as and worship Allah with it. Then at the end of it is salawat on the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and which is mentioned, and the followers say Ameen. The individual singularizes it. So like the Imam will say Allahumma hadina fi man hadait, Allah guide us, and the follower, the individual will say Allahumma hadini, Allah guide me, right? And then he mentions here that wipe the face with both hands while both in and out of prayer. The hadith on this are a level of hasan. If you notice, the Shafi'is, when they do their qunut, they don't wipe their face. In the Hanbali mazhab, we do. If you put all the hadith together, then they come to a level where that they can be acted upon. However, the hadith generally, individually, they might be considered weak. But they're good to practice upon due to the many different narrations. Hassan li ghayrihi, for those who want to know. However, due to the numerous narrations, it will be a mistake, without a doubt, there will be a mistake if someone to do tabdi' call a Muslim a mubtadi' or bidati, that is, yeah, exactly. So, jazakallah khair. So, the Amir al-Mu'mineen fil hadith, the brother pointed out as well, Ibn Hajar Asqalani rahimahullah says that that this is, if you put all the narrations together, then it comes to a level of hasan. But to call another Muslim mubtadi' bidati based on this is way out of line, is incorrect attitude. If you don't see it as a sunnah, it's not strong enough that you can say that it's from Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, this is your choice. But you can't call Muslims mubtadi' because of this, especially when it's coming from a madhab, a school that is serviced by thousands of muhaddiseen and scholars and fuqaha. There are 10 emphasized routine prayers. Same thing with Taraweeh. Taraweeh, I think it's going to come a bit later again. Taraweeh is a separate prayer, as per the madhab, considered separate from what we nafal tahajjud, that is done, we could do any time of the year. It's 20 rakats according to the Hanbali madhab. There are 10 emphasized routine prayers, 2 rakats before dhuhr. These are the rawatib, the routine prayers, 2 rakats after it, after dhuhr, 2 rakats after maghrib, 2 rakats after isha, and 2 rakats before fajr. The most emphasis of them is fajr, followed by maghrib, because that's, fajr is the beginning of the day, maghrib is the beginning, fajr is the beginning of the day, maghrib is the beginning of the night, and then the others. And there's rewards for this, as we know. There's another narration that it says it's 12 rakats, meaning before dhuhr it's 4. All our salats are done 2s and 2s. During the day ones can be done in 4, but definitely all the salats of the night, they're done in twos. Taraweeh consists of 20 rakats made in congregation during Ramadan. Salam is made every 2 rakats with intention before each set. Right. And the rewards, you know, rewards for praying, there's 12, the hadith of rewards is that there's a house, whoever prays of 12 rakats, a house is built for them in Jannah. Inshallah, they get it for 10 as well. But sometimes you might be in a hurry, then you do 10, like 2 before, you might not be late if you get 2 in there, but you should aim for there's in the commentary of Akhsar, goes in a lot of detail. One of the commentaries goes a lot of detail on these nafl prayers. There's a lot of nafl prayers to do, actually. But these are sunnah rawatib, right? The taraweeh is 20, as I mentioned. Now, what do you do when the imam, if you want to pray witr, not too long, we'll finish soon. If you want to pray witr, if you want to pray witr afterwards, pray your own tahajjud. Yeah, the brother mentioned the various books. Yeah, this can be discussed in longer books. The idea here is not to mention everything, you know. But Ahmed, I appreciate it. We're trying to just stick to the matan. Mashallah, you've got all you're armed with all the adilla, mashallah, taqabbal Allah. What do you do when, if you want to pray, you're praying tarawih, you follow the imam, you pray 20 rakats, you're praying witr, 2 and 1. What do you do if you want to pray witr, tahajjud later on? You want to do, because the last prayer of the night should be tahajjud, right? If you know that you're going to wake up for the last part of the night, what you should do, you should pray. How would you do the witr? You're in the mosque. You can add another rakah after the imam completes. Yep. So the imam is praying 2, then 1. So then you add another rakah, and then now you have, that becomes like nafal. And right. So a couple of things I wanted to mention. Firstly, you should pray. Why should you pray till the imam finishes? No, I mean, proceed means, no, why should you wait till the imam finishes a salat? Like, why don't you leave before the witr? Because you're going to pray witr later. Why would you stay till the end of witr? Why not just do the tarawih and then leave? And you're going to do your witr later on. So there's a hadith that you get the reward. You get the reward of staying of tahajjud if you pray with the imam until the end. That's why you stay at the end. You get this reward because you're going to do it anyway. So why are you doubling up? Right? Number one. Number two is that Jamaat of the Muslims, obviously, you shouldn't, it's disrespectful to leave the Jamaat early. You know, we have this problem in Australia at 8 rakat, people just, half the mosque disappears. Some of them go outside, stand with their friends. The hafiz is doing all the work. If your mosque is praying Khatam al-Quran in, like I said, I tell them is that, look, the imam is doing all the work. The hafiz, he keeps his Quran the whole year. He memorized, it took him three, four years to memorize it, keeping it strong the whole year. He makes sure, because the hafiz have to do that all the time, keep up with it. All you have to do is stand and listen, and you get the reward of listening to the whole Quran and Salat in this 1 month. But you live at 8, I'm not arguing the 8 and 20 issue. What I'm telling you is that our khatam in our mosque, for example, is in 20 rakats. Stay for the 20, get the whole reward of the whole Quran. But then what the people do is at 8 they go, all right, they go at 8, but then what they do outside is they stand outside, have a coffee and a smoke while they're standing outside near the mosque, which is kind of disrespectful. So you stay till the end with the imam to get the reward that Rasulullah said, if you pray till the end, you get the reward of the hajj. But what happens if you want to pray in the night, but what happens if the imam is a Hanafi imam and he does 3 rakat salat? He doesn't do, because according to their mother, there is no 1 rakat witr. Then what do you do? I'm going over the time, I do apologize. But would you add the 1 rakat or not? Make it easy question. Would you add the 1 rakat or not? Yes or no? Would you make it a 4 rakat salat? Astaghfirullah, Brother Faisal. But Rasulullah said the salat of the night is 2 twos. Mathna, mathna. So I asked this question, Dr. Mutlaq, after discussing with him back and forth. He said that you pray your witr then with the imam. That's it. That's your witr for the night. And you can pray tahajjud later on. So you prayed with the imam, you got that reward, and you get the reward of being a qiyamul layl because you prayed right till the end. You prayed your witr, right? You'll have to give up something somewhere. And you follow all instructions of Rasulullah, which is, that you prayed that night, you have not done something that contradicts the madhab, you know? Do you understand? Like, it's a reconciliation. You're putting moving parts together, you know, many multiple parts together. So this was, he said that that's your witr, and you don't do a 4 rakat salat. Yeah, that's, you give you, I hope that's clear, inshallah. Let's finish this, inshallah. It's time is between the, emphasize routine prayer of Isha and the witr. So after Rawatib, the 2 rakat sunnah of Isha, and witr in the masjid in the beginning of the night is preferred. Subsequently, witr is made in congregation. We're almost done. Salatul Layl is the most virtuous, the last half of the night, because Allah descends to the sky of the world, as the hadith mentioned. Then the first Qiyam is a Layli Sunnah and commence with two short rakats, so you can have the energy to do it. Rasulullah said the most virtuous prayer after Fard is Qiyamul Layl. Qiyamul Layl means Tahajjud or Nafl prayers of the night. So you pray the first two just to get everything going, warmed up. If you sleep, intention is made before sleep. If you do that, you get the reward of Tahajjud. Abundant bowing and prostration are more virtuous than prolonged standing. Do you do a few rakats that are very long, or do you do many, many rakats? So according to the madhab, there's khilaf in this, according to Hanafis and others, that if you pray longer, it's better. In the madhab, that if you do more actions, more rukus, more sajdas, ziyadatul fi'l, increase in actions, get more ajr. However, sometimes you can do this, sometimes you can do that. Duha, the next salat is salat duha, it's sunnah every other day. Because sometimes Rasulullah didn't do it, as per the hadith of Aisha radiallahu anha, and other sahaba, in Fath Makkah, the hadith is there, Rasulullah did eight. So that from two up to at most is eight. It's from the time the sun after sunrise, when the prohibited time finishes, until just before Zawal. So you got that whole time to do it. It's one time, considered one time. And duha can be more than eight as well, if you want to. It's nafl, right? So it's open-ended. It's sunnah to perform tahiyyatul masjid when you enter the masjid. It is sunnah to perform the sunnatul wudu, that after wudu to pray to rakat. And you can make wudu, come in, make dual intention for tahiyyatul masjid and sunnatul wudu, and get the reward for both praying one salat. It is sunnah to perform and pray between maghrib and isha. And it is considered part of qiyamul layl. The night starts after maghrib. So you can do qiyamul layl after maghrib to pray nafl salat. Salatul istikhara is sunnah, even for something good, which is then done immediately after it. So istikhara is, like Ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu said, that we were taught istikhara like a surah of the Quran, the dua of istikhara. As mentioned previously, istikhara is not made in doing a good action, whether you should do good or not. It's made about the time and place, like should I do Hajj Umrah this month or next month, for example. Should I do extra khidmah for my parents? Or should I, if they don't need it, but I want to be good, do some extra good things for my parents, or should I go study as an example? Istikhara can be made about those things. Salatul Hajjah for Allah the Most High or for fellow men is sunnah. It says sunnah here, but in the Jawzi rahmatullah, he's mentioned these hadiths in Mawdu'at. Other texts like Dalil al-Talib and Umd al-Talib have not mentioned Salatul Hajjah. However, if you look at the Quran itself, وَاسْتَعِينُ بِالصَّبْرِ وَالصَّلَاةِ. So salat, whether you call it salat, salat in itself is something that we seek Allah's aid with in itself. It's just two rakat salat, or even after farad salat. Maybe the author had another riwayah, but as for the riwayah that is well known, Ibn Jawzi rahmatullah ulama, it's not well known among the ulama, that it's among the mawdu'at, concocted hadith. Salatul Tawbah is also sunnah. Someone commits sin and asks forgiveness from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, there's wudu, two rakat. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, whoever makes wudu and prays two rakat and he doesn't let his thoughts wander, except he's forgiven all his previous sins. Sajda tilawa is sunnah when closely followed for the reciter, when it's immediately after the part that you read, for those who can hear the tilawa and those reciting and those who are listening to it, not someone who hears it just walking past, right? Sajd shukr, sujood shukr, sujood of gratitude is sunnah when a blessing is renewed or harm is avoided. And similarly, Allahu Akbar, sajda, get up, and Allahu Akbar, and salam after that. There are five prohibited, same with shukr and same with sajda. There are five prohibited times. So these five can be summarized into three. From the start of the second fajr, the actual fajr time starting, until the sunrise. All right, there's no salat allowed this except for the sunnahs of fajr and the fard of fajr. From the asr until the sunset, from the rising until it's risen a spear's height, so the sun has gone above the horizon. Right, so the one and three actually related to each other. It's like a continuation, one after each other. And at its zenith until it declines, right at midday until it declines, right when the sun is at zuhr time, it's not allowed to pray. And it's setting until it completes. So asr until sets, when it starts setting until it completes, number five. In these times, it's absolutely haram to begin a nafl prayer apart from the following. So it's haram to pray any salat in these times. An obligatory makeup prayer, fard prayer that you have to do a qada of. Two rakats of tawaf. You finish tawaf, it's after asr, for example, you can do those two rakats. The recommended prayer of fajr, right? So the sunnah prayers of fajr can be performed. Like those are the two sunnahs of fajr before the fard of fajr.